WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a crisis and a pandemic, and we're all staying at home, and we're all buying toilet paper and doing all sorts of things and trying to stay safe. And as our new logo here says, keep calm, stay local. We're Baltimore Positive. Don Moeller joining us here, former Baltimore County Executive. As part of our Baltimore Positive program, a big shout out to our friends at State Fair, are also our friends at Fadley's. They're all doing curbside. And the last time we visited with this guy, we were at Fadley's, and the crab cakes were involved. It was November the 14th when Thoreau Vignaraja joined us down at Fadley's to put together some Baltimore Positive content that I hope you'll go back and take a look and listen to, as well as all of the candidates involved. And Don, it's been a little while. A lot of things have gone on. I didn't know that when next time we were going to get together with Thoreau, we'd be in the middle of a pandemic. We had tried to get all the candidates together for an election, and now we've moved the election, correct?
Well, it's Baltimore Positive in the era of social distancing, right, Nestor? And Thoreau, welcome back. It's, as I said to you before we went on the air, these are indeed strange times, are they not?
They sure are. Thank you for having me. Thank you for continuing to plow through in these uncertain times. And it is, you know, it's just to think back to when we last spoke, it feels forever ago. It really does in so many ways.
Well, we were talking about things like soccer and basketball, things that don't exist anymore, right?
Yeah. Look, it'll all come back. You know, crises are, they're called crises because they are meant to occupy a time, a season. We will get through this, but all of us have to be as responsible as we can possibly be to make sure this crisis is as diminished and dampened as possible.
Well, Thoreau, one of the things that Nestor and I have been talking a lot about on and off air, talking with other candidates about, is that one of the outcomes of this pandemic and this crisis, as you said, that we are in the midst of right now, has been the real focus on state and local leadership. And I think by all accounts, if you look across the nation, you look here in the state of Maryland, I think Democrat, Republican, Independent, everybody gives Governor Hogan high marks. The county executives, Democrat and Republican, are all getting high marks, standing really in stark contrast to what we see at the federal level. It shined a light on who's going to be the next mayor in a very, very different way. So one of the things we want to give every candidate an opportunity is to say, imagining that there's this kind of crisis in a Vignaraja administration, what makes you the right guy? Why can voters look to you and say, I'm confident that Thoreau's the kind of guy we want heading this ship in difficult times? Because this is not the last time this will happen.
Yeah, it's a very valuable question, Don, but I want to take a step back. You know, we're a local campaign in the middle of a global pandemic. It is important to take a moment to put this in perspective. We've been careful not to take too many political jabs, to try to focus on bringing our community together. But you're absolutely right. Crises are what leaders are most needed for. The day-to-day stuff, there's a lot of opportunities for a leader to govern, to set an agenda, to execute on that agenda. But you also have to reflect on who you want at the helm in moments like this. And Baltimore, like it or not, has more than its fair share of crises, some of them self-imposed, some of them historically rooted, some of them of no one's fault, like this one. But how you prepare for that, how you govern in a moment like that, is really important to consider. You know, what I have emphasized is I think the people of Baltimore, the people of the country, want calm, clear, compassionate leadership in a moment like this. You want somebody who's not going to overestimate or underestimate the threat. You want somebody who's going to be communicating in lucid and accurate terms on a daily basis. And you want someone who's going to appreciate the many ways in which a crisis like this affects people. It affects their ability to pay a mortgage. It affects their ability to see their parents. It affects people's ability to go to and from their daily routines, the impact on trauma, on mental health. Those are the subterranean issues that somebody who's in a leadership role has to appreciate, in addition to the high-level critical decisions about whether you close the schools, whether you shut down the restaurants, the impact that has on your economy. But at the end of the day, I think what people are looking for is someone who has been in those kinds of positions before and has shown an ability through calm, clear, compassionate leadership to be able to keep the ship afloat.
Tharoor Vigniraja joining us here. Don Mohler also with us. We're doing a special edition of Baltimore Positive and WNST programming. Now that there's no sports to stick to any longer, we are talking about all things leadership and local leadership. Tharoor, we've seen so much with Larry Hogan, and you know, every morning he comes on, every morning the president comes on. It is kind of a stark contrast one way or another. Talking about the good things that are happening here and some confidence that people can have in local government and things happening right and county executives coming together. There is something stirring here in the recent days about public shaming people on beaches and saying, hey, You're messing with my grandmother's ability to stay alive, or in my case, my wife, who was diagnosed six years ago today with leukemia. I'm literally going through the mask pictures to put a little collage up as to what we should be doing to stay safe, that everyone should be treating everyone the way I treated my wife when she had cancer.
Right. No, it's so important. And, you know, I really don't care what party you are. You know, at the early days of this, I was watching one of Larry Hogan's press conferences with my team, and I turned to them and said something, which a few days later, when he had another press conference postponing the election, I put out on Twitter, which is, no matter what party you are, Governor Hogan's response to this crisis has been a case study in leadership. I have to tell you, I've been really impressed. Each day, there is clarity from Annapolis on where we stand and where we're going. Each day, there is decisive judgments that are being made on very difficult questions, and he's explaining the rationale of those decisions as lucidly as he can. I think there is some clear lessons for us to take from how he is approaching this. You know, to be willing to make hard judgments whether they're popular or not, being willing to get input from a lot of people, experts, your colleagues, the people that you trust, and then ultimately make some judgments and then explain them to the people of the state, of the country, in ways that they can understand. I think there's some real wisdom in how he is approaching this. And frankly, it stands in stark contrast to what we're seeing at other levels. Again, I don't think it's valuable at this point to poke holes at the way that others are approaching it. I think it is valuable, however, to emphasize how well I think our governor has handled this. And look, I'm a proud lifelong Democrat. But if you don't appreciate the value of clear-eyed leadership in a moment like this, you haven't been paying attention to history, let alone to recent times.
So you're on that it's not a hoax, right, Tharoor? Let's make that clear.
It is not a hoax. People should be treating this as a deadly serious matter. At the local level, at the national level, we see a doubling of confirmed cases every two or three days. Every public health official, the CDC, they are reading from the same script. This is going to cost a lot of people in America their lives. Immunocompromised people, older people like our parents, the vectors can be carried by people that are in good health and of fine age, but we are risking older people and vulnerable people not just getting sick, but dying as a consequence of this. I heard some very, very troubling numbers from a public health official that people over 80, 20% of them, for 20% of them, it's fatal. For 50% of them, it requires a ICU intervention at the hospital. And that, of course, is displacing other people. If you have a car accident right now, if you're the victim of a gunshot, if you have a heart attack or a health condition like your wife had, and you suddenly have to take one of those ICU beds, it may right now be taken by someone else. And to not appreciate the turmoil that this sets a health system that is, you know, inadequately prepared for it. There are some people that are being very, very irresponsible. And, you know, earlier in the trajectory of this, you know, I was one of the first to say, guys, get out of the damn bars. I know it's St. Patrick's Day weekend, but you are becoming vectors to your friends, to your friends' parents, to your friends' loved ones that are immunocompromised, to the friend that you don't know is going to be in a car accident in 2 weeks, and there's not going to be a bed for them at Shock Trauma or at Hopkins. This is deadly serious. And, you know, in the early days, you saw the numbers, right? A couple of people over 60 that got diagnosed, two or three people that were in their 20s that were getting confirmed. This is very, very serious. And in a calm, sober voice, I think our leaders need to make that crystal clear. I think Larry Hogan has done that. I wish everyone would.
Yeah, and Carew, you were very kind and I think thoughtful in saying we really need to look forward and highlight those who are doing the right thing, probably kinder than I would be at this point personally, because I think the behavior of the President of the United States and the evening talk show host on Fox News, I think their actions actually put Americans at risk. I think their actions are part of the reason why 20-year-olds are packing the beaches in Texas and packing the beaches in Florida. I think their cavalier, this is a hoax approach, actually put us at risk.
Well, the governor's also not shutting the beach down, so we go back to leadership, fellas, right?
Correct, correct. In Florida, you're talking
yes.
about. Yes. Yes, leaving it up to local officials. So it is about leadership. So, again, Thoreau, I want
and Don,
to come... Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. And let's be clear. One of the reasons I am being measured is I'm a candidate for public office.
I understand.
And I think throwing stones at my current opponents, this is not the time for that. But I am happy to point out against people that I'm not running against that there are some plain deficits. The confusion and uncertainty, the hyperbole and inaccurate information that's coming out of D.C. is irresponsible and reckless. I've been critical of some of the decisions that are made at the local level when people are worried about lawlessness and chaos to send a signal that certain laws aren't going to be enforced. I don't think that's a responsible thing to do unless it's being done in complete lockstep collaboration with the governor, with the police commissioner, with everyone that's in that position. This is not a time for PR stunts. Be clear. I think local leaders have an opportunity to highlight some things, you know, that, and if you want to talk about my team going out and buying some takeout from small businesses to highlight that, that's not a PR stunt. That's us trying to draw some good attention to some needs that are currently in place. You know, I hope some folks are going to go take seriously the need for a blood drive. I hope some folks are going to make sure that they take a walk around the park so they send a signal to people about what they can do and what they can't do. There's some real opportunity for leadership, and there's some opportunity to criticize. I'm just saving my criticism with respect to my current political landscape because I just don't think that's the tone I want to set in my particular race.
I totally understand that. Can you go sort of through to the 10,000 feet level and give folks a glimpse? Because I want to come back to that original question, and that is, can this person running for mayor handle this
yep.
kind of crisis? So take us to 10,000 feet and describe for us how a Vignaraja administration would be handling the day-to-day operation of government in this type of
yep.
crisis.
Yep, it's a great question, and I wanted to give a vision for what that looks like, what I refer to as calm, clear, compassionate leadership. But let me give some details. And I think it's important to remember, Don, that leadership is something that is partly innate. It is also partly learned. You know, I've had an opportunity to lead in a lot of different contexts that gives you some muscle memory for what you're supposed to do when things are uncertain. You know, I was president of the Harvard Law Review. I led my high school soccer team to a 1-42 record. Now, those are kind of silly opportunities to lead. Those are in very different contrast to, for example, leading the Major Investigations Unit, which obviously was responsible for investigating and prosecuting some of the most serious gangs at a time when crime was very, very high, when there was a lot of pressure to make sure that we were driving violent crime down in a responsible way. I was deputy attorney general when there was a Republican governor. We had to find ways to work with others, even if we didn't agree on everything with respect to our values and our positions. Here is what I would do. Number one, we should be having a daily press conference where the public and the media is able to ask whatever questions they need for however long that they need to ask them, and we give honest, lucid answers. Number two, we should be convening our high-level cabinet to prioritize the decisions that need to be made and to make them in a timely fashion, no matter the impact on popularity. The person who's supposed to be leading is not the person who's worrying about their donors. It's not the person who's worrying about the next election. It's about doing the right thing now. And over the course of my career, I've had to make some unpopular decisions. I've had to bear the consequences of that. But muscle memory is important here, and not being afraid to make unpopular decisions when you know it's the right thing to do. Again, I think that's the second thing that I would emphasize, is making those decisions. And then the third thing is communicating these hard decisions in a timely fashion with evidence and clear-eyed, common-sense arguments. Why did we wait so long to declare a state of a major emergency? Why did the city have to defer to the state on when their bars and restaurants should be closed? Baltimore City has a higher concentration of those bars and restaurants. To not close them before St. Patrick's Day, you know, these are the kinds of things that require some hard judgments. Now, at the same time, and I think this is the last piece of the leadership puzzle, so if it's daily press conferences open to the public, if it's making hard judgments with the information from your cabinet, if it's communicating those decisions clearly, the last piece, I think, of leadership in a crisis is acknowledging that there is a short-term and long-term horizon to the judgments that we're making. You have to appreciate the marathon and the sprint involved in these kinds of crises. We need to shut down the bars and restaurants today, but we also need to figure out how those small businesses are going to stay afloat in a week. We have to make sure that we are causing disruptions to the economy in the short term, but we also have to acknowledge that mortgages are going to come due at the end of the month and find out how banks are going to agree to mortgage holidays. And being able to account for both those short-term and long-term decisions, I think, is a really important facet of my leadership style. When I was chief of major investigations, we had a trial that was coming up this week, but we also knew there were six other investigations that were happening that were not going to come down for 3 months. We also knew that there was a two-year agenda that we were trying to execute on, and being able to walk and chew gum in that regard, I think, is a really, really important part of leadership. And no disrespect to the other field. I mean, I think we got a lot of people that are good faith candidates, but I don't think anybody has had the kind of record of management and leadership at the local level, at the federal level, in a lot of different contexts as I have. And this is the test you've been preparing for if you've devoted yourself to public service. This is the test that that will inevitably face the next mayor. And choosing wrong here does have consequences, and unfortunately we're seeing that at the local and federal level.
Go ahead, John. I would say, Saru, as you look forward now, we've got 2.5 months. We expected the election to be over on April the 28th. We had looked forward to a forum that you all were going to attend, sponsored by Baltimore Positive, on April the 14th. Obviously, all of that is in flux. With 2.5 months to go and campaigning in a very, very different way, give us an update. Give folks out there in their cars driving around now, give them an update as to where your campaign is and what it looks like over the next 2.5 months. I think folks want to know, okay, what's going on? How are you going to campaign? How are you going to get your message out? And what should they be paying attention to?
Yeah. You know, you saw some campaigns in the eye of the hurricane, you know, talking about what decision by the governor was best for their strategy and how they would benefit from it. You saw people, exalting their, their polling numbers and how much money they'd raised. And look, I think it's important to keep it in perspective. What I told my team was, whatever happens, we are in a good position to roll with this. We have great fundamentals. You know, the basics of any good team is those fundamentals. We have a disciplined team. We have a team that is cohesive, that loves one another, that cares about one another. And we have a team that has been nimble and innovative throughout this campaign. The uncertainty that a change, a postponement has created is going to require some creativity. It's going to require some resources. The good news is we have both. I think if for anybody watching this campaign from last April until now, no one has been doing more innovative things. No one has been pushing out more important policies. No one has been communicating in all parts of the city. No one's raised more money than us. And the combination of the discipline that we have cultivated over the course of our campaign to approach each day with a sober, clear-eyed understanding of the priorities, that will that'll be good for us in this extended season. You know, it's like I said to the team, guys, you've been running a marathon at full speed, and I am so grateful to the tireless staff that I have. And we just got told at mile 20 that the marathon is now a 32-mile race. We're going to be able to run it. My team is ready to go, but I'm going to insist that everybody take some time for some water breaks. I think that's the first thing that I can give you guys as an update. But be clear, we're already innovating. We're already trying to show leadership. We're going to be having a briefing series daily with an expert, with a community leader, so people see what daily leadership looks like. Tomorrow, in the near future, we'll be having a former health commissioner from Baltimore City talking to us. We'll be having the head of the Baltimore City Chamber of Commerce. We'll be having the head of a bank talk about mortgage holidays. Each day, we're going to try to provide some information from the campaign, even as we show and give an update on where things are in Baltimore. We're also going to be modifying our approach with respect to our billboards, our TV strategy. We've already made our billboards available to local and state officials if they want to use a public health announcement. Right early on, we had this messaging campaign that said, stop, wash, and learn, inspired by the stop, drop, and roll campaign from years ago. We have now put up a new thing that says, save lives now, stay home. That's inspired by the state public health announcements that you see on the roadways. So we're trying to do that kind of leadership as well. At the same time, let's not forget, guys, crime and corruption are not going to go away. They were crises before coronavirus. They will remain crises after this pandemic is under control. Not long ago, we had 7 shootings in one day. 7 people were shot. That same week, we had 7 murders in 7 days. That didn't make a headline in Baltimore. Understandably, that was because the pandemic was on every newspaper and every station. It's also because we've become a little bit too accustomed to storylines like that in Baltimore City. Well, be clear, we're going to make sure people know that at a moment like this, we don't need another career politician. We need a prosecutor. We don't need a person who's been there for 5, 10, or 15 years who's decided to do this on a whim or a lark. We need somebody who's been devoted to Baltimore, devoted to public service, devoted to fighting crime. And I'm excited to make sure that we have every opportunity to get that message out to every corner of the city. I'd remind your listeners, there's been 3 public polls, and we're the only campaign that has been first or second in all 3 of them. That consistency is the reward of making sure we're emphasizing concrete, real solutions to the hardest questions. I don't decline an invitation. When there's hard questions asked of me, I answer them. When there's controversy, we go up there and stand up to the heat and we explain what we're about to do. And when you talk about how to root out corruption, how to drive down murders, how to cut property taxes in half, how to stimulate the economy, how to rebuild the police department, how to rebuild our transit grid, for each and every one of those audacious goals that we've set on impossible problems, we have a clear tactical plan. I think the people of Baltimore find it refreshing. I think people of Baltimore are desperate for change. And a native son of Baltimore who has a chance to pay back the city that saved his family's life, my God, what a privilege it would be whether in crisis or in good times, leadership matters, and we appreciate the opportunity to share that message, even if it's going to take a little bit longer to deliver it in the middle of a true global crisis.
Tharoor Vigniraja joining us here. He's a candidate for mayor. Just like our sign here says, keep calm, stay local. It is another Baltimore Positive segment here, along with Don Moeller, our former Baltimore County executive and partner in crime with all things State Fair, as well as Fadley's, trying to keep our sponsors alive. Through so many of our sponsors doing curbside takeout here, as long as they're allowed to do all of this. I want to go back to crime, and I want to go back to being a citizen and where we are, because the coronavirus is going to happen. I think it's going to be overwhelming. I think it's serious. I've been taking it seriously long before the president was even calling it a hoax. I go back to how far back I was actually elbowing people. I go back before Valentine's Day because I remembered some meetings. But all of this stuff that's happening, crime is still going to happen, as you've pointed out. Yep. And it's probably a breeding ground for crime when you consider where the temperature is, where people are out and about, where there is no martial law or lockdown, and what would happen then. I have no idea. But I am a little more concerned of an uptick of crime and a little more concerned about looting and things like that that could be happening here if we're not careful in the coming weeks, and if we don't have the kind of leadership and police and presence that we probably need to have during this pandemic.
Yeah, look, two things to emphasize. Number one, there is real uncertainty as to what impact this will have. The longest period in modern Baltimore history where our city went without a murder was during the snowpocalypse, that long stretch of that, you know, that blizzard. People staying home can drive down crime. And if that is what we end up being in the middle of, that may arguably help, although, of course, that has dramatic impacts on our economy. But at the end of the day, when you see 7 murders in 7 days and a 7-person shot one day in the middle of the early part of this pandemic, it doesn't suggest that the criminal element is getting the message. When that gets compounded by some of your local leaders saying, we're not going to enforce certain laws, that sends a signal, I think the wrong signal, to the criminal element that the police force is overwhelmed and they're not going to take certain kinds of crime seriously, which makes everybody move one level up in terms of what they're willing to do. So those are some real causes for concern. But I want to leave you guys with a note of optimism, because as we've pledged from the beginning, we don't want to just drive murders down in a responsible way. We want to make sure we create a template for what cities across this nation could do. We have an opportunity here to show what a pioneer is. And look, if anybody really thinks that Jack Young or Brandon Scott or Mary Miller or any of these other candidates have a real crime plan, just go spend a minute reading theirs and then reading ours and seeing the night and day difference. I mean, these are folks that they just haven't devoted their lives to fighting crime. So that's not their expertise. I don't blame them. They're not people of bad faith. They just don't know how to solve that kind of problem. But we have an opportunity here to create a model that'll be remembered for a generation. And maybe I'll end with the coronavirus example. Philadelphia and St. Louis reacted and responded very differently to the 1918 outbreak. St. Louis acted responsibly, shut things down within a couple of days. Philadelphia had a parade in the middle of their streets. Their casualty rate in Philadelphia was twice that of St. Louis. And public health officials looked back to that over 100 years ago to show what leadership did in St. Louis and how failures of leadership had dire consequences in Philadelphia.
Close the beach, right?
That's exactly right. I want us to be an example for history to remember, whether it comes to fighting a virus, whether it comes to fighting the public health crisis of crime, whether it comes to showing how gangs can be brought to justice without mandatory minimums or mass incarceration. We have an opportunity to lead, but we need a leader for that. Somebody who's been doing it their whole life, who's been fighting crime without glory, without great pay, but doing it for the right reasons. That's what I have an opportunity to tell the people of Baltimore, and that's why we're looking forward to the election. No matter how it's held, no matter when it's held, we think the people of Baltimore are going to have a clear choice, and I'm looking forward to leading this city into the next decade.
So, Tharoor, before you run, a couple of quick things, just real quick, and we know you're busy. You got to get to the next event. First of all, you talked about your crime plan. Where do folks go to find more information? Tharoor 2020?
Tharoor2020.com. If you click on Vision, We have all of the different plans. The very first one is End the Bloodshed. You will see our 26-page plan on how to fight crime. You will see our plan on how to recruit, retain, and rebuild the police force. Both of those are critical components of how we get our city back on track.
And the last question, Saru, it would really be unfair, I guess, to let you go without giving you an opportunity to talk about this. You talked about you faced all the tough questions. You didn't dodge anything. A while back, you had an unfortunate incident where your car was stopped for a taillight or a license plate being out, and it became very public, and it was on every news station. What do you say to folks who read about that? What have you been communicating to your supporters who followed that incident? What do you say to them?
Yeah, look, I appreciate every opportunity to engage on this, and I'll make sure to end on a positive note after I answer this. Here, you know, first thing we do is we always explain the facts. And I also, you know, want to emphasize that, of course, I didn't handle it perfectly. I regret that I said that on day one that this was issued. I wasn't acting out of privilege. I was acting out of frustration. I could have spoken to the officer in a better tone. And at the very end of the stop, I apologized and I wished him well and I asked him to be safe. But, of course, I could have handled myself better. 40 minutes into a traffic stop, one of the officers came up and asked me whether I wanted the camera on. And I responded by saying, I'm happy either way to talk to you. A few minutes later, he came up and asked, and I then asked him to turn the camera off. It wasn't because I had some nefarious purpose. It was because I was tired. We'd been there for 40, 45 minutes. My friend had left and taken an Uber back to her hotel. I was waiting for the tow truck. We were all getting a little bit tired. And, I regret it because I could have handled myself better, and here are the lessons I've learned. Public service is public. I can't let my guard down. If I get frustrated, I don't get the luxury of allowing that frustration to show, even if it is in a private moment. And it's important for us to sort of set the best example that we can. This wasn't the best example. I've apologized for it. I've regretted some of the decisions I've made, but the thing I regret perhaps most from a political perspective is I've allowed my political opponents to change the story. You know, we should be focusing on the strategy to bring down 350 murders, not on a traffic stop about a repair order. We should be talking about how to rebuild these broken schools and how a generation of leadership has failed us, not about, you know, an imperfect judgment in one particular occasion that our opponents tried to weaponize the week after we were leading in the polls and announced we had $1 million. Thankfully, I think most people are moving back to the main issues. They've put this in context. They've come to understand what happened and what did not happen. And we have been as clear-eyed as we can about this. And I'm looking forward to moving on. And I'll end with a positive note.
With regret, I just want to follow up on that for a second. Just because I haven't asked you and I haven't seen you out, and I like you. I like all the candidates, quite frankly. I would just say this, the optics of it, and I'm not a Fox 45 news watcher. You know, I've seen a couple of clips of it. I'm not obsessed with it in any way. The thing that the people have talked to me about it was the point where you say, can you turn off your camera? I've been pulled over for taillights, you know, expired tag. You know, I've had all of those things. I've never been, like, arrested or anything. But I have been pulled over late at night in Baltimore City three times in my 35 years of driving. I've never thought to say to the police officer, can you turn the camera off? Like, that's the only thing I've said privately, and I'll say that to you publicly.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thought that never enters my mind to say to the cop, turn your camera. I don't think the cop has a camera. Maybe it just hasn't. It's been a while since I've been pulled over or whatever. But but that's just my first thought. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, Nestor, look, you know, this is the part that is a little frustrating because sometimes the media doesn't show all the pieces of it. You know.
Oh, I know that, too. I've been a public figure for 30 years. I get it, dude.
Yep. You know, a few minutes before the clip where I asked him to turn it off, because I didn't think of it, the officer had come up to me first and asked me. And when he first asked me, he said, do you want the camera on? This is one of the officers. I said, I don't care.
Why is that an option? You've worked in this space. Why is that a legal option?
Well, here's what happens. With, you know, Jim Johnson, the former police chief for Baltimore County, I think you guys know him well, actually went on C4 and explained, you know, he's helped write these body camera guidelines all across the country. And Jim Johnson explained that under the Baltimore City guidelines, not only is there an appropriate level of discretion for officers in the field to conduct themselves, but actually, once the person is free to leave, the officer's required to make that option clear to the person if they want to. And, you know, my friend had already taken an Uber back to her hotel. We were just waiting for the tow truck. I think the officer was doing it consistent with his guidelines. And that's why that discretion, I gather, is built in there. But at the end of the day, look, whether it was an option or not, whether the officer handled himself perfectly or not, I do regret it. It just wasn't, we were just tired. A few minutes later, you see on the other body camera, they had checked to see, because everybody, I think, was sick of waiting for the tow truck, and they decided to, let me drive home. But that was not a nefarious purpose. I mean, this is the part that's so frustrating. The officer asked me a few minutes later, I appreciated his courtesy and I accepted it. But it wasn't me initiating that conversation.
Well, that's why we wanted to give you an opportunity to clarify. I appreciate you doing that. But let's go out, you said, on something positive. Again, I think I want to come back to, in all of these, and we look forward, as I said, Taru, to having all the candidates on, really, over the next 2.5 months, because I think it's going to be difficult for folks to connect with candidates and hear what they want to say.
Yeah, you're not shaking any hands, hopefully.
And we want to be a part at Baltimore Positive of allowing you all to do that. So, again, very simply, folks are now beginning to focus. They know how important the mayor is. This pandemic has made that more clear than it's ever been. Why, Taru, when we vote on June 2nd?
Yeah, look, I'm going to sort of use the line of questioning you guys just went through a couple minutes ago as an example. At the end of the day, we all have a long history and a long record. None of us are perfect. And if you judge us by a moment like that, I think you're losing perspective on what we need from our leaders. I've devoted myself to fighting crime. I was a federal prosecutor. I was chief of major investigations in Baltimore City. I was deputy attorney general. I was a Supreme Court clerk to Justice Breyer. At each and every one of those stages, not only did I go through a security clearance, I had to transmit my taxes to the public. I have been vetted over and over again. I'm now a partner at DLA Piper, one of the largest law firms in the world. No one has ever wondered about my integrity, except for once you get into a political conversation. But you can look over and over again at these important opportunities where I've had a chance to lead to show the kind of service, my commitment to service that I've shown. In a different election, at a different time, if crime was not the dominant narrative, maybe people wouldn't be paying attention to the former federal and city prosecutor. Maybe people wouldn't be paying attention to a native son of Baltimore who devoted himself to public service in the context of fighting crime. But a moment like this, when crime is the dominant narrative, when people are leaving the city because they're afraid, people are leaving the city because the headlines are about carjackings and killings, let's be clear about what we need from that leader. Detroit elected a former prosecutor, crime went down. Chicago elected a former prosecutor, crime went down. New York City elected a former prosecutor, crime went down. If you think there's some other issue, then you're welcome to look at the rest of our plans and see our ideas there. But for the overwhelming majority of people in Baltimore that live here and see crime dominate their headlines and destroy their neighborhoods, they're looking for someone who has a record and a commitment to having the courage to do the things that are needed. I've done that my whole life. I'm doing this because I love my city and I want to give back. I've done that my whole life, and I'd be honored to have the privilege of a lifetime to serve this city as I have done my whole life and to lead this city into the next decade. Thank you guys so much for your time.
Appreciate great you. Through Vignaraj, you're joining us here. Don Moeller as well. Don, you want to wrap up? Go ahead, bud.
No, I just want to say I want to thank Taru for coming on. Hope you'll come back repeatedly over the next 2.5 months to get your message out. It's an important election. It's really about the future of the city, the future of the region. So, Nestor, go ahead and take us out.
They may be even more important with the coronavirus. We're keeping you updated. Baltimore Positive, WNST, keep calm, stay local. Wash your hands. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive, and we never stop talking Baltimore sports and things and staying clean.